Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, guys, Thursday morning. Welcome to the Believe You Me podcast. Lots going on in the world. Lewis, how are you today?
I'm pretty good, my friend. I'm not good.
All right,
let me rephrase that. I'm not good. That was just a generic bullshit answer. I found out today that I've just been going through tolls for the past month, assuming that they're going to mail me the tolls. They mailed me the tolls, but there's a $50 fucking fee attached for each day that I didn't pay the toll.
Lewis, I'm sorry. On this podcast, we cannot fucking just counsel you on your inadequacies when it comes to cars. Okay.
It's crazy.
You don't know how to change a tire. If you go through a toll and you don't pay, that's your lookout. They don't chase you around and follow you around and give you reminders and knock on your door and say, hey, Mr. Gomez, you've got to pay this. You go through a fucking toll, you have to pay it yourself. Simple as that.
I know. Well, my assumption was, because I think there are certain tolls where it just says pay by mail. You just go through and then they mail you the toll. But then apparently in New Jersey, if you do that, $1.50 toll, I get a $50 fee attached to it. So I have $700 in tolls that I got in the mail today.
Oh, God, that fucking sucks. How much would it have cost you if you'd have just paid it at the time?
$13. We're talking about so little.
Fucking sucks to be you, bro. Sucks to be you. Pay. That's what you need a wife for. Because whenever I go through a toll, I go, babe, did this, blah, 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 blah. Do me a favor, take care of that. Because I suck at those kind of things.
Sending money off,
sending anything off, going down to the post office and sending things. Like, I get a lot of messages on Instagram. People ask stuff and I try and be nice and I try and say, I'll give a little positive message back or whatever. And then they fucking cross the boundary and then they want me to send them things. So do you have any gloves? Do you have this? Do you have that? I don't have a fucking garage full of gloves and merchandise and memorabilia just on standby to send off.
Devil's advocate. Go on. You do. I mean, I've been to your house. He has so much shit in his garage. It is wild. It's like a Michael Bisping memorial museum. There's so much shit, though.
It's my shit, right, that I've collected over the years. And secondly, I don't want to part ways with it for free to a random stranger. And then sometimes I agree and I do because I'm touched by whatever and I fucking want to give to charity or whatever. But it's the going down to the post office. It's the grabbing the things, wrapping it up, going down to the post office and paying. Now, the paying isn't the problem, but it's the process of doing all of that. And I have so many people I've meant to send things, but I don't know how to get on to this.
This is what I do when you wake up and I get in a mood and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to pay every bill right now. And I start calling places. And then by the second phone call, I'm on hold and you have to use an automated system and you can't get through to the person. And it just gives me terrible anxiety. I think that's half the reason men get married is because they don't want to deal with that shit. And you're like, you know what? If this woman is willing to put up with my shit and take care of all this stuff, I'm willing to settle down.
It's a rather cynical approach and a view to marriage and the holy matrimony and joining one another for a lifetime through sickness and health and health. What is it? Sickness and health, richer or poorer? Do you know what I mean? It's a rather cynical approach. It's not the only reason I got married, but I will say this. I've never paid a bill in my life. I haven't. And I used to get in so much shit. I'm just like you. But fortunately, I have a better half that does take care of those things. But all right, we'll just pay the goddamn tolls, Lewis. Come on, get organized, man. You're a mogul.
I had an assistant for a while. She was my acting wife. She would book my flights. She would make sure that my credit was good. She would make sure that all my bills are paid on time. It's been a rough year, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you who he's getting rougher for as well. He's had a very, very rough year. Old Tom Brady, poor guy, just keeps winning Super Bowls after Super Bowl after Super Bowl. He's had the opposite of a rough year. The man's a fucking legend and everyone's swinging off his nuts. That was until yesterday. Yesterday, I'm scrolling through Twitter and I see a little video and it's a guy getting off a boat. bus. Again, I doubt Tom Brady travels on buses unless it's a big fancy tour bus. No, he's getting off a boat and he's hammered. He's hammered and he's walking off the boat and his buddy's holding him up. But the problem is there's about 100 media members there and they're all filming him and chanting things out. And I was like, my initial reaction was like, God bless the guy. He's just won, I think it's his 7th Super Bowl, right? He went to another team and made them win the Super Bowl. The man has earned the right to enjoy himself a little bit. Apparently, by all accounts, he's very, very disciplined. Here he is walking off the boat. Some guy holding him up there in a kind of weird fashion.
It's been a while since I've been that drunk.
Yeah, put it back to the start there, Brian. It's hilarious because the guy's really grabbing hold of him and he's just making it worse. Do you know what I'm saying? Granted, he could have fallen over.
Let's see.
Hold on.
He's having a blast. So what did they do? They did like, instead of a normal parade, a Super Bowl parade, what they did was they did like a boat parade, right? Where they would...
Oh, really?
I guess to create social distancing. I have no idea. I sort of read that in my peripheral that it was like a boat parade instead of a regular parade.
So it was a planned celebration?
Yeah. Oh, it was a planned celebration.
I thought he just got out with his buddies or whoever on a boat and enjoyed himself. And he's got every right to do that. Give the man a break. Because I'm talking about the comments on social media saying, oh, this man, he's a role model to children. Shame on him and all the rest of it. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
And you can also be a role model and have a night where you get drunk or celebrate yourself. You're fine.
All those people talking shit, I guarantee they get hammered at the weekend or they sit on the couch and they're smoking cigarettes and they're doing whatever. The man is a tip-top athlete, exercises discipline year-round. He's just won the Super Bowl. And now you're telling me it was actually a planned celebration. And who knows? Maybe he didn't have many carbs that day. Maybe the CEO went to his head. Who gives a fuck? The man went and got wasted and he had every right to celebrate and get wasted. All these people condemning him.
What happened to when I grew up, and Bisping, we're the same generation. You're only a couple years older than me. What happened to us sort of appreciating the dangerous lifestyle of the athlete, the rock star, the actor? It's like, you know, you hear all these stories about, you know, people just get fucked up. This is just the way it's because, you know what it is? It's because everyone's got a cell phone now and everyone's got a camera on them and everything's being taped and documented. Now there's this weird, like, we got to catch people doing things that they're not supposed to be doing. So it's this fake morality. Nobody has a morality where they think you shouldn't get drunk. Nobody gives a shit. But for some reason, it becomes a story.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely ridiculous. This is the top response here to that video that I saw. The comment is from some asshole, some do-gooder. How am I supposed to explain to my 8-year-old that Tom Brady binge drinks alcohol? Shouldn't he be setting a better example? It's like, no, he doesn't owe it to you. Now, of course, Tom Brady, I'm sure, I don't know the guy. Never met the guy, but I'm sure he takes his position very seriously. I'm sure he's very responsible. He's a good father and all the rest of it. But as I said before, if the man wants to go and celebrate and get hammered, let the man live. Give him a fucking break. These do-gooders, man, judging and picking on people. It's ridiculous.
Can you read that comment again? Because I want to get the wording of it correctly.
All right, one second. It was, how am I supposed to explain to my 8-year-old none of the 8-year-old's business, for one. They should be doing some school work or some social distancing fucking learning, hybrid, virtual. How should I explain to my 8-year-old son that Tom Brady binge drinks alcohol? Shouldn't he be setting a better example?
No, he shouldn't be. You should be setting a better example and stop looking at celebrities to be setting examples for your children. That is batshit. That is such a non-self-aware response to something like that. You shouldn't be pointing your kids in the directions of other men to set an example for them. You know, if you feel strongly that you shouldn't be drinking alcohol, then let your child know that. And then he's going to, let me tell you something. I got an 8-year-old. He looks to me more than he looks to anybody else in the world for influence and how to act, how to be. There's nobody else in the world. There's no celebrity. There's nobody on TV. There's no athlete. He looks at us first. So what that person's doing is they're just virtue signaling and using their kid for the excuse to virtue signal.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It wouldn't surprise me if it's just a troll job as well. You never know with Twitter these days. But you're absolutely right, Lewis. That's a good point. You know, the father should take ultimate responsibility and the mother, of course. And so what if the eight-year-old sees that and does ask questions? And I guarantee he didn't, because looking at that video, an eight-year-old is just going to think, oh, he's got a big smile on his face and his buddy's giving him a hug, right? But let's just say the eight-year-old is a little bit woke and he has seen dad slaughtered at the weekend. So he knows the signs and he says, oh, dad, is Tom Brady drinking? You just explain and say, well, son, sometimes, you know, grown-ups, they enjoy themselves and they drink a little bit of alcohol and sometimes it can go to your head a little bit. But the man's a legend and he deserves it. He's worked very, very hard all year and he was enjoying himself and the beers went to his head a little bit. It's not a big deal unless you make it one. Grow up and get a goddamn life, you miserable bastards.
Was your family the type of family? It's just a different thing in Europe because I know the drinking age, number one, is lower just to begin with. It's 16, right?
18.
18. Okay. I think it's 16 in some places in Europe for sure. Because I know people in high school went on vacation.
I think in Germany. And then when you go to mainland Europe, the attitude towards alcohol is a little different. Like you go in France, you'll see vending machines where you might buy a Pepsi or a Sprite or whatever. And they sell beers. You know what I mean?
So there's nobody IDing.
Well, no, you can just buy a fucking beer. I remember I went with the school and I went with the Scouts. I was like, oh my God, we could just buy a beer at a vending machine, you know? Because it doesn't have that same kind of stigma attached to it, I don't think. But go on. What was your question or your point?
Were your parents the type of parents like buy you and your friends alcohol before you were of the age to drink?
My dad didn't necessarily buy me alcohol. No, he never did that. But he allowed us to drink in the house. I remember every Christmas you get like the Christmas hamper, you know, and what that is, like a big hamper turns up with tons of booze and food and treats and meats and this. Just, you know, so we got tons of nice stuff in the house. Every year we get the Christmas hamper with so much booze in it, so much booze. And I remember one year, me, Conrad, and my old buddy Lester, we sat down with my dad and got well and truly hammered. And it might not have ended up with me and Conrad getting into a massive fight. My poor old mum, bless her, we put her through some bloody time. Because we went to drop Lester off and me and Conrad started arguing in the fucking car. And it actually kicked off. Conrad punched me from behind and my mum's screaming. I got out the door. He's trying to get out of the car. I'm slamming him with the car door. He's twice my size. He gets out and then I'm like, oh shit. And he gets me and he slams me on the floor and he's choking me out. And I actually think, and I'm letting the snow, Conrad's choking me out. He's fucking gigantic. And he used to do jiu-jitsu and stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to die here. So I think, right, I'll pretend to be dead. I'll pretend to be dead so he'll let go. Do you know what I mean? That's what I thought. Because there's no getting that fucking gigantic bear off, I'm telling you now. So anyway, so I pretend to be dead like I've gone unconscious. And he's not stopping. There comes a point where you've got to bail on the fraudulent, on what you're trying to put forward. I'm like, pretend to be dead. At some point he's going to stop. And then I'm like, at some point I am actually going to die. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, when do you stop? Anyway, eventually he let me go. So we didn't drink too often.
Right. Yeah, I had like my mom wasn't a drinker at all, but she didn't really like when I started smoking weed, she sort of gave a shit a little bit, but definitely wasn't the cool mom. I never had friends over, but I had a few of those friends who would have parties and their parents would just buy booze for all the kids. And they were like the cool parents that's a little fucking wild, especially today. I guess back in the day, it wasn't as big of a deal. I know you have the story where you brought Callum some booze when he first went to college, but would you ever do that? Would you ever allow the kids to drink in the house, like a party?
Not really. Like when I grew up, my mum was very, very strict. My dad was the opposite. You know what I mean? He was kind of, you know, as I say, he'd let us have a few beers or whatever, but he wasn't buying beers for us to hang out the weekend, me and my mates. But my mum on the flip side, she was very, very strict, Catholic, Northern Irish. You know what I mean? She was very, very ruled with an iron fist and very, very strict. But what was the question?
It was if you would ever let your kids.
Oh, No, I mean, listen, Callum's 20 now. Callum's 20. So when he's in the house, you know, if he wants a beer, I'll let him have a beer. See, I'm obviously of the English mindset where 18, you're allowed to drink alcohol. And he's not a drinker anyway. He literally, he'll have one, he'll have two. And I was like, son, have another beer. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm like, you're fine. You can have one. And he's like, I don't want one. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
It's easier to do it when if your kids are good kids, where they're not like getting crazy, you're like, Yeah, it's a little easier. But if they're fucking out there partying and getting wild, you almost don't want to encourage it.
Gallum's just not that kid whatsoever. So we're very, very lucky there. But yeah, Tom Brady, there you go. Do you know what I mean? People are miserable and they just want to pick on people, you know?
People were freaking out as well. I saw another video of him. He was carrying his daughter. And I guess this is before he was inebriated. And people were freaking out that he wasn't wearing a mask. And he was like sort of embracing with certain people. And like, he was sort of in his circle of people. But yeah, people are just going to, anything that you do these days, they're going to scrutinize. If you're famous, if you're in the spotlight, I would almost, he's so famous and he just won the Super Bowl. You wonder if he's immune from it. Like, does he completely disconnect from the comments? Because you and I don't, we talk about it all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, as much as you want to ignore the haters and the shitty comments, it's nearly impossible. I wonder if you're that famous, he probably gets it so much. Just people that were fans of the other team that he played against probably are wishing him death and sending him death threats and fucking telling him
without a shadow of a doubt. You know, I mean, sport fans are very, very passionate. So yeah, there's a lot of people that wanted him to lose and a lot of people that are going to talk shit. But as I say, get a life. If that's what you've got going on, you're going to go to Twitter and you're going to judge Tom Brady, one of the most successful athletes of all time, certainly in American sports. You know, to get to that kind of level requires tremendous discipline and a tremendous work ethic and sacrifice and all these type of things, right? And then he goes and gets drunk afterwards, and you're gonna bitch and you're gonna complain. Get off the man's case.
I just unfortunate. Don't give a shit. He's a famous guy. He's getting drunk. Football players used to go to strip clubs and smack strippers on the ass and fucking get hammered. And do blow and fucking
and maybe he power to him. And maybe he didn't know there was going to be tons of media there and people waiting for him. It's just the way it is. He's just a victim of his own success, I guess, in certain, if you look at it a certain way. But anyway, God bless the guy. Good for him.
Okay, real quick, we must thank Manscaped for supporting today's show. I do love my Lawnmower 3.0. If you guys don't know, it is the best personal grooming shaver on the market. It's nearly impossible to nick yourself, which that's the main problem. When you're trimming downstairs, if you pull out a Bic or a razor or head trimmers or whatever, you have to be super careful. It takes a really, really long time, and you're putting your frankenbeans in danger.
Listen, at the end of the day, this is 2021, okay? We're not cavemen anymore. We want to be groomed. We want to look good. And I feel like your significant other also expects that of you. A little bit of hygiene down there. So what does that mean? It means some grooming. It means some self-care. It means trimming your balls, your frankenbeans. Lewis always calls it the frankenbeans now, but that's fine. We know what he's talking about. We clarified it last week. The meat and two veg. Now, before the Manscaped was on the market, I've cut my balls so many times. You have, Lewis. Everyone has. Everyone doing this, you're like, okay, it's that every 2-3 months you go, okay, I'm gonna have a little zzz down there, maybe every month. I don't know. I see Lewis rolling his eyes at that number. Maybe you trim your balls every day. Maybe you're a psycho. I don't have time for that, Lewis, okay? But when I do it in the past, I always, always cut my balls and it would sting for a good few days afterwards.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. And they have all of these extra features. I think the main thing you got to understand, it's super safe to use, really easy to use, very quiet. That you can use it in the dark. It is an LED light. It's waterproof.
Are you talking about the 7,000 rev per minute motor with quiet stroke technology?
I am.
Are you talking about the LED light which illuminates grooming areas for a closer and more precise trimming area?
I am.
Well, when I tell you this is premium, I mean premium, because guess what, Lewis? The battery lasts up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave if your balls are just that big.
Yeah, I mean, if you need 90 minutes to shave your balls, I feel like you need to contact the Guinness Book of World Records or something.
Get a life. If you're spending 90 minutes, if you're testing that battery out to its fullest and you're shaving your ass crack, let's just say, I'm just going to go full commando. I'm going to go totally bare. The Manscaped can do that. I saw TJ Dillashaw or somebody the other day, and they were shaving everywhere. This can do your face. It can do your ass. It can do your balls. It can do your forearms. It can do your triceps if you want that. It will leave you smooth as a baby's bum. And you should try it.
And I'll tell you right now, we give you a pretty incredible discount. It's already affordable, but if you go to manscaped.com, manscaped.com, we're going to give you 20% off plus free shipping if you use the promo code Bisping. Once again, that's manscaped.com, 20% off free shipping. Your wallet's going to thank you. Your balls are going to thank you. Your significant other is going to thank you. It's the best deal you could possibly get. So go there right now, manscaped.com, use that promo code Bisping. All right, where were we?
Well, actually, sticking with the drinking theme, what can you tell me about this, Lewis? I don't know too much about it, but Bruce Springsteen, tell me about the king or the boss. The boss, pardon me.
The king. No, it's Elvis, my friend.
The boss. I corrected myself. Relax.
I don't know much about Bruce Springsteen. All I know is that he was arrested back in November for drunk driving in New Jersey, and this only came to light this past week because he released a Jeep commercial during the Super Bowl, which the commercial was just so bizarre. He's from Jersey. He's not from the middle of the fucking country. Okay. It does not look like that in New Jersey. But yeah, I guess they fired him, or they pulled the Jeep ad because he got a DUI, which, I mean, it's Jeep's right. It's just, once again, just, I almost look at it as like, people are, you know, people are human beings. Like, they just make stupid mistakes. They do stupid things. You know, does he deserve to be fired for getting a DUI? I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, it's shitty.
Yes.
It's shitty.
Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. Tom Brady can go out there and get shit-faced if he wants, but Bruce Springsteen, being who he is, right? If you are involved with a car, this is just the state of the reality. You're endorsing cars, but then you get a DUI, right? They can't allow that, and they've got to take a stand. And it sucks, right? But to be honest, drunk drivers kill a lot of people, and I'm very much against it. I like a drink, we all know that, but I don't get behind the fucking wheel. I don't drink and drive. So if you go out there, you drink and drive, you know, you got to pay the price, unfortunately. Yeah,
as I was saying it, I sort of changed my position on it because I got a kid. It's fucking disgusting. You see this sometimes, like, maybe I was reading this on Reddit or something, but like, people will be working at a fast food drive-through and somebody will come through drunk. Oh, that's right. It was an Am I the Asshole on Reddit. It's a Reddit page. And he was like, I call the guy was like, I work at a drive-through. When I see people come through that are drunk, I call the cops on them immediately. Am I the asshole?
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think that guy's an asshole for calling the cops? Because I don't.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. No, dude, you're out there putting people's lives at risk. There could be a little fucking kid playing in the street, driving with his parents.
Not all superheroes wear capes, okay? This is a modern day Batman, okay? He's undercover. He's working at fucking Wendy's or McDonald's, Burger King, whichever one. Take your pick. Which fast food joint?
We'll say Wendy's.
Oh, fucking Wendy's. So he's making Baconators all day long, but secretly behind the mask, he's looking for drink drivers. That drink driver could have gone off. He could have turned around the corner. He'd have been eating his burger, not paying attention, and run over a very, very unfortunate immigrant family. They've just got off the boat. It's been a long fucking journey. The people have suffered enough. They're living in a shabby apartment. They're just walking out just to get a little meal, and this prick runs them over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, out here in LA, there's a lot of that type of thing. It is crazy. It seems every day on the news, hit and runs and things like that. And I see this more often than I would like. The people driving down the freeway the wrong way, and then you got head-on collisions. I mean, can you imagine that? You're going out. I mean, this is depressing, so we'll get off it in a second. But you're going out with your family, just minding your own business, law-abiding citizens, sticking to the rules. And a car comes the opposite way on the goddamn freeway because some drunk asshole, and they have a head-on collision, and the entire family's wiped out. So, yeah, if you drink driving, you know, you got to pay the price, simple as that.
I lost a friend exactly that way on Christmas Day. A few years ago, really good guy who worked at a comedy club named Rick. And he was just such a good dude. And I mean, just like no fault of his own, did nothing wrong in the world. Just a dumbass kid got fucked up and then boom, straight down the wrong way, head on collision. Everyone in the car died. And the kid who was drunk didn't die. The kid who was drunk walked away, which is fucking wild. It's just wild.
Yeah, they often say because you're drunk, you're not as tense or whatever, so therefore you don't get as badly hurt. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that theory. But still, anyway, we'll move on from the depressing stories of people dying in head-on collisions, because that's definitely not what you tuned into this podcast for. Before we get into the MMA news, a little bit of boxing news. Yesterday it was announced Floyd Mayweather, Mike Tyson, and Evander Holyfield are going to go at it for a third time. Remember, the last time they met, I think Mike Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield's ear. I want to take a look at this video, Lewis. Watch this. Brian, there's a video from an Instagram account, which actually my son runs. It's a Mark Cuban company, believe it or not, and it's called @FightClub. Fight Club on Instagram. Everyone, give it a follow. This is the type of content you'll get. But play that video, because it shows the incident, but it has Evander and Tyson both commentating the event. So it's pretty fascinating.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Roll the tape, Brian.
Oh, and some nasty stuff in there. There needs to be a bite almost. Holyfield is very unhappy. Look at this.
Thank you. I'd have been as bald as a dick. This fucking last time I remember, I'm gonna die. And it was on. I was getting ready to bite the daylights out here. and I'm gonna bite him in the face. I wouldn't wait for the ear. I'm gonna get the fat chuck. You know, because, you know, when you're from the ghetto, they say, if you do something, you got to do it worse than what they did. I really wanted to bite him back. And all of a sudden, it hit my mind that they always catch the second person. How bad did it hurt? I said, did you see how high I jumped?
That was wild. That just shows how crazy Mike Tyson was back in the day to bite somebody's ear off. Absolutely goddamn insane.
He lost the first fight, right? And he was losing the second fight. Is that what was going on?
Yeah, he was losing it. Yeah. I mean, Evander's a fantastic boxer, one of the best ever, as is Mike Tyson, of course. But yeah, he was losing and obviously through the frustration, just saw the ear and thought, I saw the ear, I'll take the ear. Yeah, I mean, shocking. But still, after, I don't know when that was. Was that 2001, maybe? I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong. But still, they're having a rematch. And apparently, they're going to generate up to $100 million each or something like that. If I'm wrong there, Harrington, chime in. But still, isn't that amazing after all these years and at their age? You know, I mean, they've got such a brand name. But to make $100 million when they're, I don't know, in their mid-50s, good for them. Can't hate on it.
Yeah, good for them. I mean, it seems like probably a viable business plan for whoever's promoting the event. It's like they're not. I don't think Evander Holyfield versus Mike Tyson 3 is going to sell like an insane amount of pay-per-views.
I don't know. I disagree. That's like it's two guys with so much history. And then if you look at what Tyson just did with the Jake Paul fight, I mean, of course, Jake Paul was on there with his big YouTube following and they did like 1.4 million buys. I think, I don't know if it will do blockbuster, insane, record-breaking numbers, but I believe it will do close to 1 million buys, I would have thought. It's just so much nostalgia there.
I'm just saying compared to when you consider mega boxing matches, right? 4 or 5 million buys for Floyd Mayweather fights. That's, you know, that when you hear about people making $100 million, you're assuming it's going to have to be that sort of those sort of numbers. But the reality is they're just taking the lion's share of the money that comes in off the pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and by the way, 4 million pay-per-view buys. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. That was a one-off, in fact. And, you know, just getting a several hundred thousand pay-per-view buy is still going to generate a lot of money. But still, you know, it's also, I know I'll watch it and I'd pay for it as well. I'd rather pay for that than, no disrespect to Ben Askren, who can't box his way out of a fucking wet paper bag, versus Logan Paul, who's a fucking Jake. YouTuber. Jake Paul, Logan Paul, whatever. Stop fucking interrupting me, okay? It's the disrespect, do you know what I mean? That I'm showing, I don't even know their names and I don't want it. I'm not going to go out of my way to learn and differentiate the brothers, okay? I'd rather give my money to Tyson and Holyfield.
This is going to be, it's also unlike Roy Jones Jr. versus Mike Tyson, this is going to actually be a sanctioned boxing match, am I correct? This isn't another...
I believe so. And they might have problems there given their ages. So that might be a little obstacle for them to get through.
Well, they're talking about doing it in either Abu Dhabi or somewhere in the Middle East.
Dubai.
Dubai, right. So I'm assuming it's going to be easier to be sanctioned there.
Yeah.
Than it
I
is
could, anywhere. I could get sanctioned in Dubai. Do you know what I mean? And that's saying something. You know what I mean? So, yeah, no, you're right. Once you get out of North America and they're highly regulated athletic commissions, things do get a lot easier. My God. All right. Let's get into some MMA stuff. Lots of good news here. Well done to Harrington. Lots of good points. Before we get into UFC 258, incidentally, I'm very, very excited for Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. Do you know what? Let's talk about this real quick. The Bellator 8-man. Light heavyweight Grand Prix. I mean, the fight, the tournament format is always great. You know, I do enjoy it. Anytime there's a tournament format, it's kind of like a throwback to the early UFCs or to the Pride Grand Prix. So I do enjoy them. Strikeforce had some good ones back in the day. They did that heavyweight Grand Prix that I think Daniel Cormier ended up winning. And Bellator have done this in the past. The only problem with that when Bellator do it is it takes so goddamn long. Sometimes it's like 18 months in the making.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I remember the Strikeforce Grand Prix was probably the last one in recent memory that was sort of like high profile that I got excited about and watched. You know, you can't, it is a little bit of a throwback, but it's like, it's sort of unspoken. There's always a tournament going on. There's always the number one guy fighting the number two guy, number two guy fighting the number three guy. you know, it's good to sort of have it be a little bit more formulaic. You know what the matchups are going to be before you go into it. But unless it's happening in the same night or even in the same, like, you know, short amount of time, it's very difficult for me to take it seriously as a tournament.
I don't necessarily agree with you there, but we're not going to debate into what you consider makes it a tournament or not. You know what I mean? It is a tournament and I do like it, but there's some great matchups on it as well. Of course, Yoel Romero and Anthony Rumble Johnson. That's the big matchup that's made, you know, making a lot of the headlines. That's an awesome fight. Two former UFC guys throwing down. I don't care where it's at. I will check that one out. So well done to Bellator for that. Glover Teixeira saying that he's going to be the backup for Jan Blachowicz and Israel Adesanya at UFC 259. So that's interesting. I doubt anybody's going to fall out of that matchup. Adesanya's not got a history of, you know, pulling out of matchups, and neither does Jan Blachowicz. But still, if they do, our man Glover Teixeira is on standby. Good for him.
Yeah, good for Glover. That'll be awesome. You know, we'll see what happens. I don't think that's likely to happen, but... If it does, I almost want it to happen because Glover's the fucking man.
Yeah, me too. I'm not going against Adesanya or Blachowicz, but still, I do want to see Glover Teixeira like get what he's owed. Not that he's necessarily owed it, but he deserves a title shot. And you know, in these days with COVID, you just never know. Like this weekend on UFC, what is it, 257 or what is it, 258 this weekend? Pedro Munoz versus Jimmy Rivera. That was, I think it was opening the main card. That fight's been scrapped off this weekend, unfortunately, because one of them, I forget which one, tested positive for COVID. So you never know. I think that's part of the reason why for these big fights, the UFC are taking the extra measure now and having like an official backup because, you know, for a pay-per-view, there's so much promotion goes into it. There's so much planning and things like that. And to lose half of the main event is absolutely catastrophic. So it's just smart business, you know?
Well, let me ask you a question. If Jan had to pull out of the fight, would Glover be fighting Israel? And then in that case, it wouldn't be a title fight. That would just simply be a really great matchup.
Still be a good fight, but there's not going to be a title on the line now, which would suck for Glover. Imagine if he went out there and beat Adesanya, took his O, but didn't get the belt. You know what I mean? That would suck. It'd be you know, it really would. It'd be unfortunate. But still, best of luck to both of those guys. What else we've got? Johnny Walker suffered a torn pec in training for his bout against Jimmy Crute. Filling in for the injured Brazilian is the friend of the show, Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith bows back from back-to-back losses with a win over Devin Clark his last time out. Fair play to Anthony Smith. You know what I mean? He did bounce back and he needed a win because he had some tough losses. But the man is a warrior. He will fight anybody, you know, and I really do enjoy and appreciate the attitude of Anthony Smith because I'm not going to say the last of a dying breed because that's almost insulting to a lot of people on the roster, but he's definitely got the qualities that you look for in a fighter. You know what I mean? Like the type of, you know, that old cliche, anyone, anytime, anywhere. He's kind of cut from that cloth, and I do very much enjoy it.
Yeah, Anthony Smith is the man. He's had it was so funny because he just fought for the title not that long ago, but since then he's gone 2-2. Okay, so it's not that bad. But yeah, it's sort of the position he's in right now. What else is he going to do? He has to be looking for an opportunity, jump in on a short notice fight, get some crazy wins, some highlight reel knockouts. That's what he needs to do in order to put himself back in that position.
But the problem is Jimmy Crute is not a walk in the park for anybody. He's a very, very tough up-and-comer who hasn't necessarily got, you know, the name value of a Glover Teixeira or somebody like that. You know, some of the other losses. And who was it? Alexander Rakic. He's another one. By the way, his management hit me up to come back on the show soon. So expect that. But Jimmy Crute, as I say, he hasn't got that same kind of, you know, name value. But he's still willing there to step up against him. And that's what I respect because a lot of people say, no, I don't want to take on this guy. He's not big enough or he's not high enough in the rankings. But Smith is just like, fuck it. You need me to fight? I'll step in. I'll fight this guy. I believe in myself. And it takes a lot of balls to do that. God bless him.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I just feel like there's not many other options. I just don't know that he's going to get a top contender right now anyway. So it's almost like the best course of action would be to get some fucking big wins, some highlight reel wins, and just to keep on building your stock back up. Anthony, I mean, luckily he's such a likable guy and he has such an exciting style that he's only a couple wins away from being, you know, really in talks of fighting higher ranked contenders anyway.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. So, Harrington, do you want to jump on, please? Show yourself and give us a bit of colour on this whole Nate Diaz situation. I know Nate Diaz did an interview with Helwani, and there's a lot to unpack from what he said. I mean, Nate Diaz, as always, comes out with very outlandish things. Where were you, Harrington?
Harrington was getting me a coffee.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, my bad. Oh. What is he doing? Is he moonlighting, doing two shows at once? Mm-hmm. We're just discussing Nate Diaz, Harrington, mm-hmm. and the interview that he did, and he came out with a lot of controversial statements, including, I don't even know where to goddamn start with what he said, so I'll hand it over to you and just highlight some of the highlights, if you will, please.
All right. Well, I mean, there was a few, as you said, just wild things Nate Diaz went into.
Like he's never been beaten. He's never been beaten was one of his things, you know. And I'm like, is he pulling a Chael Sonnen? You know, because Chael obviously had that whole bit, but that was a shtick, and it was clearly tongue firmly in cheek. But I don't know if it is with Diaz. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. He said, "I like the winners because I'm the winner. I ain't lost to nobody. I'm trying to fight the guys who are winning." So you know, he essentially in that statement said that he had no interest in fighting the Justin Gaethjes and Tony Fergusons of the world, both of whom are coming off of losses, because they're not in his class where he is an undefeated fighter by Nate Diaz standards, I suppose.
Can we just, I mean, call a spade here? Nate Diaz is a drug addict, and it needs to be pointed out, okay? I mean, what do you want to say? He smokes a lot of weed.
Just because you are now on this little health kick and you're holier than thou, now you're walking around calling Luis J. Gomez, Nate Diaz, a drug addict. Bro, I never saw either of you, in fact, without a fucking vape pen in your mouth, right, from first thing in the morning. And now you're calling Nate Diaz a drug addict. I think that's a bit of a stretch, if I'm honest.
I need to be consistent here. Yeah, you also shouldn't take anything that I say seriously because I'm a drug addict. Or Harrington, for that matter. When you start
hanging... He smokes weed. You can't call him a drug addict.
What else is it? Yes, fine. Potato, patata. Drug addict, pothead. It is what it is. You just can't really take what Nate Diaz says at face value. He says ridiculous shit on the Helwani show. He was so high, it was fucking wild.
What was he saying? He was saying that Connor, he was basically making excuses for Connor losing, saying that he emptied the gas tank too soon, so to speak, and that's because Poirier knocked him out and Diaz didn't knock him out. You know what I'm saying, Harrington?
Well, he also said, I'm not going to play that fucking nice guy like Conor McGregor just did with him. Conor just walked him right in for the taking. I think a fight with me would be more real, more serious situation for me. I don't think he could sleep with that, insinuating that this new Mr. Nice Guy, Conor McGregor, who just wanted to help promote his hot sauce and donate $500,000 to charity, is what contributed to McGregor losing that fight.
Yeah, I don't think that's what contributed to losing the fight. But Nate Diaz, I mean, he's a tremendous fighter. People want to see the man fight, you know, and I understand he knows his worth and all the rest of it. So that's part of the reason he doesn't fight too often. And he's holding out for more money and all the rest of it. But ultimately, you got to fight. And he sits there and he's very opinionated and talks a lot of shit about a lot of people. To get in the octagon, that's the best way to prove your point. And now... he's saying, and we talked about this on the last show, so we won't dwell on it too long, but moving up to 170, that just seems to be so bizarre. You got all this action going on in the lightweight division. You got all the stars, all his rivals, Dustin Poirier, Charlie Olives, Charles Oliveira, Conor McGregor, Justin Gaethje, all these people. And he's like, you can see me at 170. I just don't understand that motivation.
Not only that, Mike, while he said in the same breath, I'm going up to 170, I've done everything at 155, there's nothing for me at lightweight anymore, he proceeded to only call out 155ers to come up to 170 to fight him. So he says he wants to go to 170, but he only wants to fight lightweights at 170.
Yeah, what? Poirier, Charles Oliveira, all for 170 pounds. He's a pothead. He's high.
Wow. Look at you, Lewis. My God, I can't wait until this little phase you're going through ends. I'm going to be like, Lewis,
it's ended. It ended a week ago. I've been smoking for a week. What are you talking about? Pothead recognizes pothead. We understand. Yeah. He's talking out his pothead language.
Listen, I want to say this because it seems like I'm always talking shit about Nate Diaz. I'm not talking shit about Nate Diaz. I enjoy Nate Diaz. I think he's a hell of a fighter. I think he's a very curious personality. I think he's kind of original in that sense. But he just says a lot of crazy, outlandish things. You know, I just want to see the man fight. You know, not just doing controversial interviews. I want to see him fight. And when he does fight, he delivers. You know, win or lose, he's always value for money. He's always great to watch. You know, but again, calling out all these 155ers, but saying I'll only fight you at 170, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. It really is. I just, you know, I mean, come on, I can't explain what goes on in Nate Diaz's head or Nick Diaz's head. But yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, the whole thing is bizarre. And you're not going to find a bigger Nick or Nate Diaz fan than me. I love those guys. I think they're the most entertaining fighters in the sport. Literally, it's crazy. These two brothers, they have some of the most exciting fights ever. They talk shit like nobody else. They epitomize badass, don't give a fuck. But at the same time, you know, Nate has to come back and win some fights. Like, part of what makes the Diaz brothers so great is because they're incredible fighters and they win, and they win in an exciting fashion. But if you're taking years off in between fights and then you're not winning the fights that you're fighting, at what point, you know, as a fan, I have to go like, I mean, I can't really put much stock as a fan into that.
I'm sorry. I like Nick Diaz. I've hung out with Nick Diaz. He's a great guy. But at some point, you've also got to, you know, you can't talk about Nick Diaz right now being a current fighter. You know, you can't talk about their fight. He hasn't fought in about 6 years. I think it was 2015, January, when he last fought Anderson Silva. That's 6 years ago, is it? Yeah, 6 years ago. Do you know what I mean? That's retired or on hiatus or on the shelf, taking a break. However you want to phrase it, you can't say that he's a current fighter. I want to see him fight again. By all accounts, Nick is back training again and looking to fight soon. And that would be awesome to see, as it would be awesome to see Nate Diaz. I tell you what, who's not happy about it is Charles Oliveira. This is Harrington's notes here. Charles Oliveira, for one, isn't happy on any of this Nate Diaz talk, with his manager jumping ahead of the situation. He said, to be honest, it's a fight that theoretically makes sense to us. Nate is not active, much less ranked. It is a fight that would only happen for financial reasons. But even so, I don't think it would be beneficial for us at this point. We know that McGregor sells a lot. Really, who he faces sells well. Nate is not at that level. Our goal is to get the belt, even if it is very financially worthwhile. Today, I do not see the struggle adding to the Charles career. Harrington, just decipher that mumbo jumbo that I just read. Give me some context there, please.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm reading your typing.
Okay, I mean, I'm quoting directly from an article. So it was Diego Lima who runs the gym. He's not only Charlie Oliveira's manager, he's also his head coach. So this is somebody who, you know, spends a ton of time with him, both in the gym and in the boardroom, if you will, you know, making these kind of fight decisions. And he's just making the point that, you know, going up to 170 to fight somebody like Nate Diaz, while it would make sense financially, it doesn't get him any close to a title. And that is the ultimate goal for Oliveira right now. You know, I mean, this is a guy who, you watch any of the embedded, you watch any of the countdown videos, he's got, you know, a nice pool in his home. He's built a nice life for himself coming up from very little. So I don't think that the financial incentive is really what's driving Charles Oliveira. He's made that point time and time again. What the motivating factor for him is getting that belt. He's not going to be happy with anything less.
Well, they are one and the same. Of course, there is like some, what's the word I'm looking for? What's the word? Outliers. There's some outliers out there like a Conor McGregor and like a Nate Diaz, you know, that will, if the UFC cut you in on it, because remember, this isn't boxing. Fighters are on set contracts. You know what I'm saying? And just because you fight a big draw doesn't necessarily mean you get a revamped purse or you get a cut to the gate or anything like that. That's not how it works. You know, boxing is a different animal. It's a different structure. In the UFC, people have the contracts. Now, if you have a high negotiating power, let's say you're a Dustin Poirier, I would imagine Dustin Poirier, even though he's not the champion, may be able to wangle a more attractive deal for himself, but I can't speak on behalf of him or the UFC, but I would assume that. Now, Charles Oliveira fighting Nate Diaz, I don't necessarily know if that would be, you know, perhaps there might be a bonus or so, but even if they did, let's just say it did tons and tons of pay-per-view buys, I don't know if he necessarily gets a cut of that. The way you get a cut is by becoming the champion. When you become the champion, then it's written into the contract. So as I say, when I said at the top of the point, they're one and the same. You become the champion, then you get the money. It's like I was talking on that documentary that's coming up. I always wanted to be champion of the world. Of course, everybody wants to be champion of the world, but it wasn't necessarily for ego reasons so I could run around saying, I want to be, I'm champion of the world, aren't I great? It was because if I'm champion of the world, the reason I got into fighting was to provide for my family. And if I'm the champ, then I'm really provided for my family. You know what I'm saying? And that was not the only motivation. Of course, everybody wants a nice shiny belt at home. But still, my point is they are one and the same. If you're fighting for the belt, you become the champion, then the money follows along.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously, you know what you're talking about better than anybody else. I'm assuming, however, if they really wanted to make Nate Diaz versus Charles Oliveira, that there could be a negotiating process where they could say, hey, we'll do it, but you're going to have to pony up more money. We've heard this happen before.
Oh, sure.
You never hear, you know, the details of those things until sort of after the fact. But there's probably a path to making a lot more money than what he would normally make to show up for a fight. But let's say that the lightweight title isn't on the table right now, okay? Because we don't know what's going to happen with the lightweight title. Right now, Khabib technically hasn't officially given it up yet. As of right now, right?
Well, apparently Khabib's meeting with Dana again soon. And you know what I mean? It's like, for fuck's sake. Do you know what I mean? I'd love to see him fight again, but retire or don't retire. Stop dangling the carrot. Stop being a tease. You know what I mean? I'm sure it's driving Dana crazy as well. It's like, just fucking make your mind up. Well, but Dana doesn't want to hear that you're retired. He wants to hear that you're fighting and you're going to fight Conor McGregor. That's what he wants to hear because that's the big, big money fight out there.
So, yeah, I mean, depending on what happens with the lightweight title, I think the Nate Diaz fight for Charles Oliveira is a really great fight. You know, but outside of Conor, there's not many people who you could be matched up with and it be like a massive, massive draw just being matched up with them. Like Conor, Nate might be up there in the top few names that draw like that. And especially with him taking this long off, I mean, you know, and whether, you know, I just feel like Charles Oliveira fighting Nate Diaz, with Nate Diaz being off for as long as he's been off and how good Charles Oliveira's look, that's a very winnable fight that's really high profile. And it's right up there with getting sort of an interim title shot whatever.
But, sorry to cut you off, but what, other than a little bit of money, what does he get out of that? The man's on a long win streak. He wants to be the champion. That's legacy. That shit lasts forever. A good win over Nate Diaz and you get some money, yeah, that's great. But you can do that when you win the belt. When you win the belt, then you have those big money matchups. Another one, to your point, though, is Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier is, after what he did to Conor McGregor, his stock has gone through the absolute roof. We're seeing him everywhere. We saw him on a Super Bowl commercial the other day. The guy is now a bona fide star. So I guarantee in future, Dustin Poirier's fights do big, big numbers as well. And he actually threw his hand into the mix. Dustin Poirier sent out a long tweet, seemingly responding to the Diaz interview, saying a fight closer to my natural weight sounds like a great idea. So, I mean, this is the thing. All these 155s, they all walk around 170. So they're just fighting, you know, at 170, they would be even fights. Nobody has to cut weight. They would technically be better performances because they're not, you know, going through those nasty weight cuts beforehand.
Yeah, it's sort of a frustrating situation at 155, whereas the weight class has never looked more exciting. It's just sort of this bottleneck that Khabib is creating right now that, you know, all these guys that are contenders, they're sitting there going like, all right, we'll fucking show up and fight or relinquish that belt so that we have an opportunity to become stars ourselves. It's almost unfair of Khabib to not make the decision.
He has made the decision, though, if I'm right. You know what I mean? to be fair, he has said, and you know, but now he is coming back. So he is playing. I don't know if he's playing a game, but he's like, okay, maybe he is going to come back. Maybe that's why they're going to have a meeting. Maybe he is actually going to fight. In fact, if they are having another meeting and he's scheduled another meeting with Dana, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's because he's going to fight again. Otherwise, why would you call a meeting? What else is there to discuss? You had one in Abu Dhabi a few weeks ago. And you said, I'm retired. And now you're calling another one a few weeks later to discuss his fighting again. Well, of course, I would say that's to come out of retirement. So there you go. Boom, 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 boom. Breaking news. Headline. There you go. Khabib's back.
I mean, you trashed me for me even suggesting that Khabib might not be retiring a few weeks ago. You gave me a trashing.
That was before he scheduled another fucking meeting. He said he was retired. Now he's doing another meeting. Okay, this weekend we have UFC 258, and you might be thinking about putting some money on. Well, don't until you've heard or you check out Premier Fight Picks. Premier Fight Picks is run by Bardia Helmi, and he is a top MMA handicapper and combat sports analyst, and he has a 70% winning track record over 2.5 years, and his subscribers won big in 2020 as they ended the year up 125 units. And they're coming off another profiting card this weekend as Bardia gave out bets, well, this is last week, on Benil Dariush, 2-1 underdog, Sungmoi Choi, and under 4 rounds on the Overeem versus Volkov fight. His longtime success as an MMA handicapper and combat analyst stems from a rich history in martial arts with over a decade of training, competing, and coaching. So you know the man knows what he's talking about, Lewis.
All you have to do is go to premierfightpicks.com. That's P-R-E-M-I-E-R fightpicks.com to subscribe and gain another stream of income on a stacked 2021 lineup of fights. He's currently offering weekly, monthly, and yearly subscriptions with the weekly plan starting at just $49.99. But if you want the best value for your buck, go with the monthly subscription and get all of his bets for the next 5 cards for only $99.99. Right now, go follow him on Instagram. That's Premier Fight Picks, and on Twitter at PFP Handicapping. You're going to want to get into the Bardia Helmi business.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, if you want to make the sport more exciting, put a few dollars on it. And rather than just sitting there and looking there and picking the favorite or taking a stab in the dark and just doing it for fun, why not take the advice of somebody that has designed their entire business around making money off the bookies? You know, this guy knows what he's talking about. It's taken him years and years and years to accrue all of this knowledge, and he has a winning track record of 70%, so it's pretty good. So put your bet on, but do it with a little bit of intelligence, you know, and that's not something you hear from us very often on the Believe You Me podcast, but check out Bardia Helmi at Premier Fight Picks and premierfightpicks.com. There you go. All right. Enjoy. Good luck. So this weekend, I'll tell you what, I've been waiting for this one a lot, Lewis. Gilbert Burns taking on Kamaru Usman at UFC 258. This is, last week in the post-fight show, I got a little silly, as I often do. I mean, be a bit stupid and silly and just trying to hype fights up and whatnot. But I'm truly excited for this one. You know, I was screaming, this is one of the best MMA fights you're likely to see. You got the true champion taking on the true number one contender. Gilbert Burns has smashed through everybody, and it's just a tremendous fight stylistically. Then you got the storyline that they both used to be training partners and friends, so they know each other's game insides and out. But still, yeah, I'm very, very excited for it. And then, you know, the undercard's not bad. It's not got massive, massive star power, but there's some really, really good fights. If you go through it here, let me see. We've got Rodolfo Vieira taking on Anthony Hernandez. Rodolfo Vieira is a very, very he's a very good jiu-jitsu player. I don't know what words I was trying to find. Highly touted. He's not highly touted. He's fucking good. He's a world champion multiple times at jiu-jitsu, and he's got heavy, heavy hands as well, taking on Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, who doesn't really have those jiu-jitsu accolades whatsoever, but he's a banger, so that should be a good fight. Main card, Julian Marquez, Mackie Patolo. Then you got Bobby Green taking on Jim Miller. That's an awesome fight. That got bumped up to the main card because, as I said, Jimmy Rivera and his opponent got bumped off. Kelvin Gastelum taking on Ian Heinisch. Good to see him back. And then Macy Barber and Alexa Grasso. Harrington, you must be so happy. You've been dying to talk about Macy Barber for so long. Here's your chance, bud. Jump on. Take the reins. Take the reins. It's your show. Let's go.
Dude, I am so excited for this fight. Very rarely do I get up for, female fights. You know, most of the time that's like, you know, popcorn time. It's going to end in a
Stephen A. Smith over here. Fuck me.
Jesus Christ, Harrington. They're professional athletes.
Okay, have a little fucking respect.
Okay, 9 times out of 10, if that woman is not either Rose Namajunas, Amanda Nunes, or Valentina, you know, like, or Wei Li, we're going to see a, you know, 3-round, you know, 5-round decision fight. It is what it is. These two ladies absolutely love.
He keeps on putting his foot further in his mouth.
No, you want a young Jacek?
Yeah, sure.
Amanda Ribas. You know, we got so many great talent. Okay. Harrington, please. Oh, my God.
Okay.
I'd say edit this bit out, but we can't.
Okay. It's too late. It's too far. It's not us, though. Can we separate ourselves from Harrington and his sexism?
I never knew you were such a misogynistic, judgmental, anti-feminist movement piece of shit, Harrington.
So 11 strikes per minute between these two. There's very little takedown to speak of. Absolutely no submission threats, really, for either one. Macy has the two submission wins, both from her days on the regional scene when she was a very, very new fighter. What it comes down to is these two ladies are going to stand in front of each other and just throw leather.
These two ladies? Yes. Jesus Christ, Harrington. They're Warriors. Fighters. Why do you have to disparage them and say ladies?
Lewis, do not detract away from the beautiful femininity that these ladies do possess. Yes, they are fighters. They are warriors. They are stepping into the octagon like modern day gladiators. But these are ladies. These are fine women. My word, Lewis, you need to have a bit of respect. And, you know, just take a long look in the mirror.
Bisping, we're sort of doing a thing where we're trashing Harrington for being
sexist.
No, but
now
right
we're doing a thing where I'm trashing you now.
No, you're misunderstanding this. The whole angle here was Harrington is disrespecting these female fighters. It's sort of a theme we're going with.
Yeah, but then I pivoted. You know what I'm saying? Go on then, Harrington. Give us your pick on that. Who do you think wins that?
Oh, I mean, the future all day, you know, twice on Sunday. She absolutely is the future for a reason. Only 22 years old, coming off an ACL surgery, you know, has been out for a year. She said in the buildup to this, I was watching the embedded and the vlog series and all that this morning. She said, you know, it was awesome to like, you know, spend that time outside of the gym for the first time ever, you know, in her life and, you know, really spend that time maturing and learning a bit and putting some things together outside of the cage. So I'm excited to see what she comes back with now. What is this, 12, 13 months removed from her last fight?
You are majorly overlooking Alexa Grasso there, my friend. Alexa Grasso is very, very tough, trains with some good ladies down there. And she brings it every time. She's good. She's good. This is not an easy fight for Macy Barber, far from it.
I'm not denying that. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight. It's not a walk in the park for anyone, especially, like I said, with these two throwing the kind of volume that they throw. However, Grasso has been flummoxed by, you know, the some of the elites at strawweight. Now she's up there against the true 125er and Macy Barber. I think that's going to give her some real problems.
Flummoxed. There we go. Flummoxed with Mike Harrington. All right. Okay. Let's get to the main event. The featured bout, the one that everyone's waiting to see. And I am, as I say, I'm very excited for this one. How do you see this one going down, Lewis?
And Kamaru's just so good. Kamaru's really, really athletic. I almost feel like, has he not been that active? Is that what's going on? Is that why?
No,
I don't know why people don't talk about him in the top pound for pound list as much as they should.
No, he fought last summer. He fought last summer. Remember, he beat Masvidal in July, something like that. So, you know, it's fair enough. 6-7 months. It's a pretty decent schedule for a champion. They generally don't fight quite as much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think he's going to be really tough to beat. I think he's got obviously got incredible wrestling. He's got incredible everything, but I think he's fallen in love with his boxing and we've seen his striking looking really, really crisp. So I think that he's just a really tough guy to beat for anybody.
All right, so let's have a look at this. So obviously, Kamaru is the wrestler and Gilbert Burns is the jiu-jitsu guy, if you want to give them a label. But they're both very good strikers, as you just said. I think if you look at them on paper, the speed advantage probably goes to Gilbert Burns. And in fact, Gilbert Burns this week was saying he knows what used to happen. He basically alluded to the fact that he would submit him. And it sounded like he alluded to that he was submitted quite frequently. He was like, he knows what happens if we hit the floor. And by the way, can I just say how much I respect Gilbert? Because yes, they are friends and yes, they are fighting. But he's also talking a little bit of shit with it as well. Do you know what I mean? He's not afraid to go there with it, you know?
Even if you're friends with somebody, I mean, it almost should be an unspoken rule. We got to sell this fight. People get interested in seeing a back and forth. They want to have like bitter rivals and a contentious relationship between the two fighters. When everyone's all like huggy and pally, it almost takes off a layer of excitement.
Well, when I fought Luke Rockhold and we had the UFC 199 phone call, you do some phone calls with journalists and whatnot, and they're all on the phone. And there was Dominic Cruz, Uriah Faber, myself, and Luke Rockhold. And I got to say, the call was pretty boring. It was pretty boring. And I've got Luke Rockhold's number, so I shot him a text. I said, Luke, FYI, I'm going to come out pretty fucking hot here because this is boring as hell. We got to sell this fucking fight.
So you said that during the call.
I sent it to Luke, yeah. I'm gonna get fucking pretty hard here now, buddy. So just stand by and be ready. Because, you know, you have got to spice it up a little bit. But
did he respond to the text?
Yeah, I can't remember what he said, but you know, yeah, yeah, sure, whatever. Took all of his brain power to say that. But all right, you know, I think obviously Gilbert has the jiu-jitsu advantage. I think he's probably a little bit hungrier as well, and he has the faster hands. But let's go through some of these stats. Now, in terms of the striking, the average fight length between these two, Gilbert Burns, the average fight length is 11 minutes and 17 seconds, and Kamaru Usman is 17 minutes and 21. Now, of course, that leads itself to think that Burns has a higher finishing rate. You know, his fights are shorter, but probably fair to say that he hasn't fought quite as hard competition as Kamaru Usman.
Also, five-round fights. So Kamaru has been doing only five-round fights for a little while, whereas Gilbert has only done a couple main events recently.
Yeah, that's right. So that will increase the average. Knockdown average per 15 minutes for Kamaru Usman is 0.36 and for Gilbert Burns, 0.35. So almost identical there on the knockdowns per 15 minutes. So that's very even. Strikes landed per minute. This is kind of telling. 4.5 landed per minute for Usman. 3.15 for Gilbert Burns. So he's a slightly busier striker statistically. Striking accuracy, again, Kamaru Usman is ahead here. Striking accuracy for Usman is 53.7% versus 46.2% for Gilbert Burns. So he's winning. Usman's leading on all these stats here. Strikes absorbed per minute. How many times you get hit per minute? 2.23 for Usman and then 2.74 for Gilbert Burns. Again, Usman ahead on all the stats. Striking defense, very close. 58.7% for Kamaru Usman. 56.9% for Burns. So again, very, very close, but Usman is ahead. And then when you look at the grappling, takedown average per 15 minutes, 3.38 for Usman, 2.21 for Burns. Takedown accuracy, 47% for Usman, 37% for Burns. Takedown defense, 100% for Kamaru Usman, which is astonishing. And 50% for Burns. So there's a big differential there. And then lastly, submission attempt average per 15 minutes, 0.14 for Usman. And only 0.71 for Gilbert Burns. But that's because these days he's doing a lot of his work with the hands, with the striking. Mm. Now, numbers don't lie and stats don't lie. And these are generally things that bookies look at, you know, when they're setting odds. And I got to say, when you look at those odds, it's very, very hard to formulate a case for how Gilbert Burns will win this fight. But I think he's got a really good chance.
I think he's got a really good chance too. I mean, it's not like he's being killed on these stats. It's not like, you know, mind blowing. They're actually pretty close, a lot of these stats. I think you said something before, which I agree with. He's really hungry. He's really hungry. He's been waiting for this fight for a while. He really fucking wants it. Now, I don't know the mindset of Kamaru, right? But I know that we've had Gilbert Burns on a few times at this point, and he really, really wants to win this fight. There's this X factor there that how much weight does that hold going into the fight? The younger, hungrier fighter. You know, Kamaru hasn't lost a fight since his second fight. I mean, how long ago it was. I just saw his record. I mean, he's all but undefeated. You know, when a guy loses that early in his career, they're just really, nobody's really laid out a path, especially in the UFC, high caliber opponents. Nobody's laid out the path on how to beat Kamaru Usman. So I think that that's another factor that sort of, you know, whereas you could be as hungry as you want to be, you still have to go in there and beat a guy who's essentially looked unbeatable in the UFC.
Yeah, and I think another factor to consider as well is that obviously both of them were teammates and Henry Hooft was their head coach. Now, Henry is a tremendous coach, very, very good Dutch kickboxer from Holland and Dutch from Holland. Yeah, go figure. And he just rounded out his style for MMA. He's a tremendous coach. Now, the thing that I'm saying is Usman left and now he's training with, I think it's Elevation Fight Team with Trevor Whitman. Maybe it's not Elevation, I forget the name. But anyway, he's training with Trevor Whitman is the point I'm making. And Trevor Whitman is one of the best minds in mixed martial arts. I'm telling you, the insights and the knowledge that he has in the fight game and striking and strategy and everything all in is second to none. It really is. That's why the UFC have him. You know, at some fights, he's like after the rounds, they go to Trevor and he gives his advice on the corner work and things like that. And every time he gives some insight. It's always very, very good. It's always powerful stuff, and it's always very notable, always very noteworthy. You know, so the guy knows a lot. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because Usman and Gilbert Burns had the same coach for a long time, right? So all the work that, or not all of the knowledge that Henry Hoof can give, but probably a lot of it, Usman has already absorbed. Right, so he's still going to have that knowledge. He's probably going to know a little bit about how they train. Yes, of course, new training methods come up all the time, but you know how they formulate the classes. You probably know the type of things they work on, the type of combinations. Now he's gone to Trevor Whitman. He's getting a whole new look, and he'll already have all the benefit of training with Henry Hooft. He's got all that stuff downloaded. That's in his backpack. That's in his brain. He's got all that there, and now he's only adding to his arsenal with what Trevor Whitman's giving him. You know, of course, a different approach, different combinations, different psychology approach, different training partners, all these things can be very beneficial. Doesn't mean they will be, but there's a very good chance that they're beneficial. So when you look at the fact that the stats are all in Usman's favor, and then you look at the fact that he's with a new coach, and that's probably going to be beneficial. Again, I'll lean towards Usman, but I've just got this feeling. I have a feeling that Gilbert Burns is going to pull it off. I really do.
I feel bad. I don't want to pick against Gilbert Burns because he's a friend of the show, been on multiple times. Kamara's been on multiple times as well, so I shouldn't say that. But
once.
But I feel like Gilbert Burns is legitimately a friend of the show. You know what I'm saying? Whereas Kamara did an interview with the show. So I feel bad picking against him. I legitimately do. But if I have to pick, backs against the wall, I kind of have to pick Kamara. You look at his performances against Masvidal, Covington, and I mean, Covington had a speed advantage and still lost the striking fight. Tyron Woodley, Rafael Dos Anjos, Damian Maia. How much did it go to the ground with Damian Maia? Do you remember?
I don't remember. But Damian Maia, to be fair, as good at jiu-jitsu as what he is, he hasn't been submitting everybody. You know, the writing's on the wall with Damian Maia. You just got to fucking avoid the ground. And a lot of people have got hip to that. When he first came to the UFC, people knew he was good at jiu-jitsu, but didn't know how good. So right. They were happy to like kind of go down there and test it a little bit. And now people know, fuck that. Don't do that. Yeah. But
and he doesn't have like the most powerful takedowns either.
Yeah,
and strikings.
He actually did get better, Damian Maia, actually, towards the end. He's still alive and he's still fighting, I think, as well. So my apologies towards the end, before he died in that deadly car crash. Listen, as I say, this is a lot of the time where I go wrong with my picks, because I look at the stats, I look at the records, and I look at everything, but then I get excited by the personal story. Do you know what I'm saying? And I truly believe that Gilbert Burns may pull this off against all the knowledge, against all the stats, all the numbers, all the what the betting, what the bookies say. What everyone says, the whole narrative says that Usman wins this fight. But I just feel that the form that Gilbert Burns has been on lately, I'm not saying he does it, but there's a very, very good chance that we have an upset on our cards. And if you look at the two fights that they had with Tyron Woodley's, Gilbert Burns was, I would say, a lot more dominant. They were both dominant, but there was more damage done to Tyron Woodley when Gilbert Burns fought him.
Yeah, it seems like Usman, I don't want to say fight safer, because his performance against Covington was really great. Like, it was a really fucking, you know, badass performance. But he does, we've seen this happen before with UFC champions, where they get the title and they want to hold on to the title. And you're seeing a lot more decisions, a lot more five-round fights. Now that he's the champion, actually, he's got a lot of decisions in his career altogether. I mean, it's definitely, if I pick Gilbert Burns, I'm picking with my heart and I'm not picking with my head. Yeah. If I had to just pick with my head, what are the actual Vegas odds? Do we know Harrington?
Well, just while he looks that up, another thing to consider as well is that, yes, Gilbert Burns is a highly accredited jiu-jitsu player, multiple-time world champion, and, you know, he's got submissions for days, and he even alludes to the fact that he did used to catch Kamaru in training. I think that's what he was, you know, pointing at. But when you're having a mixed martial arts fight, it's very, very different. When being good at jiu-jitsu and competing on the ground in somebody's guard, it's not jiu-jitsu anymore. Do you know what I mean? Of course, you can punch and you can elbow and all the rest of it. But if you just shut somebody down and you don't play that game, it's hard to catch somebody in a submission. In training, Kamaru may have been engaging in more jiu-jitsu-style combat because it is training, because he's trying to get better. He's trying to maybe catch him in submissions as well. Like certain positions, like mount is a great position to be in, but sometimes you can get reversed off there. Sometimes it's better to just hold half guard. You know, when you're in a high level fight, high pressure situation, you don't take silly risks. In the training room, Kamaru Usman may take risks because he wants to try it. He wants to go for it. He wants to try and catch the world champion in a submission. So therefore, that leaves him open to be countered, swept, submitted himself by Gilbert. In a UFC mixed martial arts contest, it's very different. You can shut people down. Kamaru is very, very strong. I know that from him. I know people that have trained with him. I've spoken to him. I haven't trained with him myself, but everybody says how strong he is. And if you get in someone's guard and you just have bicep control and you put your forearms, your hands on the shoulders and the forearms on the bicep, you can control them a lot, pass guard a little bit and just smother them. You know, and you won't give Gilbert a lot of room to work with in terms of submissions.
Yeah, I mean, obviously training is a major different thing than the actual fight itself. You know, especially if you're being a good training partner and you're trying to learn, you know, you're going to probably put yourself in more dangerous positions on the ground. You're going to put yourself into maybe difficult positions to get out of, to test yourself, to see if you can push there. So I don't know that Gilbert Burns has this insight on Kamaru Usman, you know, and is in his head, because the fight scenario is a way different thing. This is interesting. Harrington just sent this over to both of us, but I guess Burns and his whole team have been talking about Usman gassing late in fights. Have you noticed that at all?
I can't say I have. I certainly didn't notice it in the Masvidal fight. The Tyron Woodley fight, I didn't notice that. In the Colby Covington fight. No. He got a knockout in the fifth round. So I don't know what the fuck they're talking about there, to be quite frank. And a little birdie that's very, very close to the situation that shall remain nameless, knows them very well, knows them both, and I will not name them, so don't ask as well. But I asked him, I said, off the record, who wins this fight? And he said, they're both incredible. He said, but on his day, he said, there's not a man alive that beats Kamaru Usman at that weight. So, and that's someone that knows them both and sees them both in the training room. Everything points to fucking Usman winning this fight. But I just think that Gilbert is going to catch him with a left hook and he's going to do some damage and he's going to follow it up. Right now, when I fought Matt Hamill, I said to my manager at the time, I said, I've seen it. I know how the fight goes. He says, oh, what did you see? I'm like, okay, well, he comes in, he rushes towards it. I step to the side, I throw a right hand, boom, I drop him, he goes down, I give him a little follow-up, and he's like, oh, sick. I'm like, yeah, that's how it's going to go. Did not go like that at all. Got my fucking ass kicked for a bit. So I could be wrong, but I've had a premonition, I've had a vision, and I see, hold on, Gilbert Burns dropping a left hook, dropping Kamaru Usman, diving on, and getting a rear naked choke or some shit.
Wait a minute. It's not a vision. It's another ocular migraine. Never mind. Yeah. You were wrong about that.
Don't mock my ocular migraines, bro. I might be going blind. What is your official pick? I mean, listen, as I say, and don't hold me to this, because Kamaru Usman.
You are really on the fence on this one. I want to point
out. I think Kamaru probably wins the fight, but I've just got a weird feeling that Gilbert may pull it off. If you look at the narrative, if you look at the numbers, if you listen to the insiders, you listen to the coaches, you listen to training partners, and you look at their performances, you can, you know, come to the conclusion that Kamaru wins this fight. But I do believe, because MMA, small gloves, one tiny little mistake is all it takes. And I think there's a good possibility that Gilbert can catch him.
I would say that if Kamaru is susceptible to being caught. If we have ever seen anything in his career where he's, you know, he's got an iron chin, super athletic. He looks better and better in each fight. It's a hard pick for Gilbert Burns. I'm rooting for Gilbert Burns. I want Gilbert Burns to win. And I think it's probably a closer fight than the bookies are giving it. Plus 245 for Usman, minus 240 to 285 for Burns. So, or I'm sorry, for Usman.
Yeah, other way around, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Usman's a big favorite coming in minus 285.
Yeah, I think it's a closer fight than the bookies are giving it credit for, but I do have to pick Usman in this fight. He's just looked really good. You know, if you look at the last three fights, Covington, Woodley, and Masvidal, he looked incredible. He looked like the best version of himself, and, you know, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope Gilbert Burns proves us wrong.
If you look at speed, that's Gilbert Burns' advantage. If you look at power, that's Kamaru Usman in a big way. If you look at ability to take a shot, you know, who's got the better chin, I'd give that to Kamaru Usman. If you look at momentum, that's pretty even, to be honest, even though Kamaru's the champ, so it doesn't get any higher than that. But Gilbert's been on a roll lately. So it is very, very close, and they know each other inside out. You know, if you're going to put money on this fight, I'd put it on Kamaru Usman. But I'd also put, I don't know, like a little prop bet of Gilbert Burns catching him with the left hook in round two or something like that. Because there's a possibility for that. But yeah, all right, I'll say Usman. I will say Usman because, you know, as I said, everything I've said for the last fucking 25 minutes points towards Usman. But I like Gilbert. I like him a lot. And if anybody deserves it, it's him. But I will say this. May the best man win.
Sweet. Very cool. Real quick, let me plug a couple things. Go to our iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. We love the positive reviews. Go to our YouTube channel, subscribe right there, hit the notification button. Every time a brand new show drops on YouTube, you get a little notification right to your phone. And if you guys want access to every episode of the show that we've ever done, both ad-free and uncensored, you get them all at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. You get a 14-day free trial. You save $1.50 a month on the premium service if you decide to keep it. This weekend, Bisping, I'm in Houston. We got nice. a live podcast. Sunday night. Well, you know, no. I am. If you guys are in the Houston area,
I won't be going down to Houston, but no, have fun. Enjoy.
It's for the fans that are listening. If you guys want to come out, I'll be there in Houston supporters. On Friday and Sunday supporters. Night, the supporters. Saturday night, I'm in Lafayette, Louisiana. And then Monday night, I'm back on Kill Tony in Austin. They moved that show down to Austin now.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do this weekend. Obviously, we've got the pay-per-view. I'm going to be watching that. But the next few weeks, I'm on UFC duty. I'm calling a few fights back-to-back. So this weekend is like my last weekend at home.
Come to Texas.
I'm not coming to fucking Texas. I'm saying I'm trying to figure out what to do with my son.
Bring him to Texas.
I'm not bringing him to Texas. We're probably going to go fishing Saturday morning. I think I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to go down to the beach, Huntington Beach Pier, maybe get a couple of fishing rods, do that, grab some lunch. You know, just be a fucking solid father, Lewis. Just do that and then come home and watch the fights. But all right, everybody, enjoy the fights, enjoy your weekend, be safe, be well. We'll be back Monday with another show. Got a couple of good guests lined up for next week. But Harrington and Brian, thank you for your assistance. And Lewis, of course, enjoy your weekend in Houston.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Thanks for watching, guys. We'll be back on Monday. Peace.